Well, I hope some of you saw yourselves up there, and make sure when that comes back again through this series, you do the little code and upload pictures. It'll be fun to have your pictures up there. I want to say welcome to everybody here in the Legacy Auditorium, as well as everybody online. Today, we're continuing our series, IRL in Real Life. We're talking about IRL as opposed to digital connection. Nothing wrong with digital connection. But what you and I are created for is something much more than that. We're created for real life connection. And yet that's easier said than done. And so we're talking about the skills that go into the kind of connection that you and I are created for. And to kind of help us get into that, I want to congratulate a Chase Oaker, an online Chase Oaker from Colorado, Corey Crane, who happens to be my wife's youngest sister, and for finishing last weekend the Leadville 100 race. When I say 100, that's a 100-mile race running, which is pretty crazy. And yeah, that's her crossing the finish line. You have to finish it under 30 hours. And so you're running all that time. It starts at 10,000 feet, that's the lowest elevation, and then 12,600 feet. You're going up and down, it's a mountain run. And so if you're doing a 100-mile run, there's a combination of a lot of focus and intensity and craziness. Because on a 100-mile run through the mountains like that, there's gonna be adversity, and you know that. And for her this time, she did it last year too, for her this time, she, about halfway through, messed up her knee, twisted her knee. It was swelling and hurting. Her feet were already hurting before the race, her left foot in particular. And she soon developed really bad blisters, even underneath her toenails. Her toenails began to come off. And you can imagine, right, this was, so for the last 50 miles, she was in significant pain. 50 miles! Think about it, not 50 feet, but 50 miles of the race. So she just had to keep pushing through it and keep pushing through it. And that's an amazing accomplishment. But what she would say, what she has said quite a bit, is that yes, it was an accomplishment, but it wasn't one she did alone. In fact, she could not have done it alone. Because with a race like that, she had a crew. And that crew was focused on being coming alongside and at aid stations along the way, providing nutrition and the right kind of hydration and even medical help and thing, whatever she needed. And then at certain intervals in the race too, she has pacers. And pacers are people who run a number of miles with her to just keep her going when everything mentally, emotionally, and physically is screaming, you can't keep going. And they're there to say, you can do this. And when at times in the race, you're gonna lose a sense of just being able to think clearly. And so it's like, no, no, we can do this. So one step, one step, one step, let's keep running, let's keep going, let's keep going. And you and I are the same way in life. Life is an endurance race. And there's going to be high moments, and that's great, but there's also going to be moments of adversity. But either way, the high points in our life are much more significant when they are shared with key connections, with key people, and certainly the adversity in our life becomes much more tolerable and endurable and possible to get through when there are people who are with us and for us on the journey. And you and I are created for those kind of connections. And in this series, we're talking about, well, how do we develop them? Because they have to be developed. And as we talked about last week, there's a lot in our culture that is working against the kind of connections we need. So how do we develop the skills that those relationships demand? Because they're not just gonna happen because you want them. They're not just gonna happen just because you're with people. There are certain skills that are required to take relationships to that level of depth. And so each week of this series is focused around a different skill. Last week, we talked about the skill of being known, of being knowable, about showing up and opening up. If you missed it, let me encourage you to go back and listen to that or watch that. Next week, Ryan is speaking on the skill of conflict, going through conflict in a way that doesn't disconnect, but actually connects you at a deeper level than if you never had the conflict in the first place. And that's a skill. This week, we're talking about the skill of knowing someone. Meaning last week, being known, this week, knowing. So last week, defense, this is playing offense. How do we relate in a way toward the other person that builds connection, that builds trust? and that bonds you together. And that's a skill. And some people are really good at that, and most of us can do it a little bit, but we all could be better. And so today we're going to talk about, well, what is the skill of knowing? And it's a little bit like, I have these magnets up here, which on Amazon, these looked huge, and they're not. But some people, I mean, they want to connect and they try, but if you on one side of these magnets in the polarization of them, right, it's just never going to connect. And yet some people are just naturally connect wherever they go. And what is it about those people? It seems like wherever they go, they can just build connection and build depth and all that. And you think, wow, they're just incredible personality. But it's not really about personality. There's a skill attached to that. And today, that's what we're going to talk about. And really, another way to say the skill today in knowing is the skill of seeing someone in a way, not just looking at them, but seeing them in a way where you relate to them in a way where they feel seen, they feel heard, they feel valued, and that is connective. Now, when you hear that, if you're like me, at least, and I think like a lot of people, you might be thinking, oh, I think I'm pretty good at that. I think I'm pretty good at that. I think I'm pretty connective. I can see people. I can connect with people. I can, in a way they feel seen and heard and valued and all that. There's all these studies that have been done, which is really interesting to learn how they do it. I can't go into all of it. But people coming out of relationships or relational interactions thinking, oh, man, I nailed it. And then they talk to the people on the other side of that interaction who's like, yeah, I don't feel connected to them at all. I don't feel seen. I don't feel heard. And what the study suggests is that this is an area of life where we tend to give ourselves too much credit. We think we're really good at this. And the truth is we can be way better, especially compared to the guide today to help us, and that's Jesus, who one of the things that made him stand out is how connective he was. And today we're going to learn how to see like Jesus saw and how to connect like Jesus connected. And it's really interesting to read through, which I did this week, and I wish I could share all of it. I can't. All the times that you see the word see, the verb see with Jesus, it's one of the more common verbs in the New Testament story about Jesus. And seeing often preceded something else. So it'd be like Jesus saw Matthew the tax collector and said, hey, come follow me. Because he saw him and he saw potential in him. He saw what he could be and he names it. Maybe somebody's done that in your life. They've seen you that way. Or at other times, Jesus sees people who are hurting and who are grieving, and he moves into that with compassion, or sees people in their sickness and he brings healing. But he sees and then something happens. And I wish I could go through all the stories, but we're going to focus on just one today. One story in Luke chapter 7, for those of you who have a Bible and or your Bible app or something like that, in Luke 7:11 is where we're going to be. And it's a simple but powerful story. So here it starts. Soon afterward, Jesus went to a town called Nain, and his disciples and a large crowd went along with him. Now, how many of you have heard of the town called Nain? Okay, probably not many people. I mean, if you happen to read through Luke and sort of remember it, okay, you got it. But nobody really has heard in our culture about Nain. But 2,000 years ago, it'd be the same way. Nain was an insignificant little village out in the middle of nowhere. It wasn't on the way to anything, scholars think. They think it was actually like Jesus would have had to walk most of the day with this crowd of people and the disciples there and then walk back. And on the way, people have been like, where do we go? Like, why are we? Nobody goes to Nain unless they get lost. Like, why are we going to Nain? And of course, he has a purpose in going to Nain. So you picture Jesus with the disciples and the crowd. Now, Nain probably was about half the population, about half the size of the crowd that Jesus was going. So he's going into the town. As he approached the town gate, a dead person was being carried out, the only son of his mother, so a widow. And she was a widow, and a large crowd from the town was with her. So as the Jesus crowd is going into the town, the gate is relatively small. there's a little convergence of the two crowds. So you've got the village crowd with funeral procession coming out as the Jesus crowd is coming in. And I'm sure a lot of people in the Jesus crowd, who didn't want to be inane anyway, are like rolling their eyes thinking, really? You know, this is happening right now. This is happening at the same time. And they would have kind of seen what's going on, but not really keyed into what's going on. But of course, Jesus is different. And that's what we're talking about. Verse 13, when the Lord saw her, the widow, his heart went out to her. And he said, don't cry. Now, I can't speak for every man in the room or online, but I can speak for me as a man that I don't handle. I mean, a guy can cry and be like, yeah, whatever, dude. But a girl crying, that gets me. It makes me uncomfortable. I don't know what to, and I'm very thankful because my wife, Christy, is not manipulative. And because if she was, she could, all she had to do was cry. And I'm like, yeah, whatever you want. Like, it's, you know, your deal. And I think that's one of the reasons why God never gave me little girls to raise. We had two boys. Because if I had a little girl, I could tell my little girls no. But now our granddaughters, they're never going to hear the word no from me, ever. Like, it's just yes, whatever you want. But my own kids, if I had little girls, I'm pretty sure I could say no until they cried. And then I'd be softy and be like, whatever you want, you know. Now, our little boys, not the same. I mean, when our boys were growing up and they would cry or whine or whatever, be like, okay, you go in another room, do that. Tell me when you're done. And because that's not going to change anything. But if you're disappointed and want to cry, that's fine. But yeah, it's not going to change anything. But that was fine. Girls crying a little bit different. I don't know if that had anything to do with Jesus, but for him, he's saying don't cry because he knows what's about to happen. He knows what he's about to do. Then he went up and touched the coffin, and those carrying around it stood still. So he goes up and he touches the coffin. Now, the coffin, by touching the coffin, there would have been a platform that sort of like a stretcher that they would have been carrying, and the coffin, which is not like a wood coffin or metal coffin like we have, it'd be like a basket with like a thing draped over it, and the body's just there. And so they would have been holding the platform, but not the coffin itself. So Jesus goes up to the basket with the body and touches the body, and they stop because they were shocked. Nobody did that. Because in that culture, there were a lot of taboos about touching dead bodies. I mean, I don't know anybody today that's thrilled about touching dead bodies, but back then, it would make you ritually unclean and spiritually unclean, all these things that they had in their minds about that. And Jesus just goes right up and touches this coffin, this basket, this body. But he doesn't just touch it. He talks to it. And he said, young man, I say to you, get up. And the dead man sat up and began to talk. And Jesus gave him back to his mother. He ruined a perfectly good funeral by raising the dead guy from the dead, which is pretty amazing. And he gives, and now, because this widow would have been destitute without a man, because in that culture, that's just the way it worked. And so this son, as that son grew up, would be her means of support, ownership of land, all of that. And so she was not only grieving, but realizing my life, what's going to happen to me? And Jesus changes all that. And the townspeople are amazed, and all this happens, and it's a really cool story. But the hinge point of the story, the part of the story that changes everything, and a connection that is an impactful connection, starts with just a simple little phrase, sentence. He saw her. He saw her. Then his heart goes out to her, and he does what he does. He saw her, his heart goes out to her, and so on. He saw her. Now, the disciples, the crowd, they would have been able to look at her. They probably looked past her, kind of looked through her, whereas Jesus zeroed in on her. And his heart went out to her. That's the difference between just looking and seeing. He didn't diminish her. He illuminated her, brought it out. And my guess is, you've had people in your life, both did both. You've had people in your life that where you've left that encounter not seen at all, not heard at all, dehumanized maybe, or just sort of diminished or ignored. That's, or maybe rejected or whatever, right? That's one way. Another way is, I hope you've had people in your life at some point in your life. In fact, it's a great little question to ask if you're with somebody or whatever, just at dinner or something like that after this or on the way home. Just say, hey, when is a time in your life where you felt seen in a significant way? Because it's a powerful thing to be seen. It's also powerful to be diminished and looked through. When I thought about that this week, I couldn't help but think about a story that you'll, if you hang around, you'll hear this from time to time because it was such an impactful story for me and I learned so much from it. It was about 2 years before the pastoral transition from Gene Getz that started our church to me. So we were in the transition process, but I wasn't the lead pastor yet. And there was a gathering that was going on that was a really cool gathering. It was a business writer and thinker named Jim Collins. And this organization was getting him together with the 50 largest church senior pastors in the country. And the person who was pulling it together is a friend of mine. And so he pulled me in. I was number 51 because I wasn't a senior pastor yet. And we were not one of the 50 largest churches in the country. But he's like, hey, you're close enough. Just come on. It'll be great. And so I'm there, but I'm there as the least important person in the room. But for me, it's really cool because, I mean, some of these pastors I knew, most of them I didn't, but I idolized all of them. And it'd be like, oh man, this is going to be amazing. I've read that guy's book. I've seen that. It's like, oh, this is going to be incredible. So it starts with a little mixer, you know, where you're just hanging out. And I'm all excited about it for about 3 minutes because it doesn't go very well for me. And the reason is everybody knew I was the least important person in the room, or they sensed it. Because there were a bunch of people who were looking at me, but looking through me, looking past me at somebody more important than me. And even some of the people who knew me were like, hey, Jeff, how you doing, buddy? Yeah, good. Okay, see ya. You know, and going on to somebody else, and I'm just standing there. So I decide to go to the corner where there were, because there was food tables, and there was a seafood table in the corner that had this shrimp, I guess prawns or something, that were massive. I don't know if they were from Chernobyl or what, but they were just massive shrimp. And the kind that you really want to put in your pocket and take home, you know? And I didn't, but I was putting them on my plate. And then I hear a voice that scared me from just kind of next to the table. And this guy said, Jeff. And I looked down and there was a guy sitting against the wall on the floor. He said, Jeff, why don't you come sit with me? Because I've been watching what's going on. I can tell you got nothing better to do. That's what he said. I said, well, you're right. And I knew him. He knew me. And so I sat down. It was a guy named Randy Pope, who was pastor of Perimeter Church in Atlanta, who did belong in the room. He just didn't want to act like it. And so he's sitting against the wall, just watching all that happen. And so I sit down next to him. And we have this incredible conversation. And he locked, you know, like eye contact locked in, and he was curious about it. He says, hey, I want to know what's happening with the transition with you and Gene. What are you learning? What's going well? What could go better? He wanted to know about my family. He wanted to know what other things that we were learning here. And he let me ask some questions too. But I'll never forget that moment to feel what it's like to be diminished and to feel what it's like to be seen. Because I was lifted up. I felt for a little bit like I almost belonged, that I had something to share, that I had something to say, right? Because I did. Everybody does. But it took somebody like that to see. And we get to decide in relationships the kind of person we're gonna be. In the book that we talked about last week, the David Brooks book called How to Know a Person, he talks about the difference, two kinds of relators. The first he calls diminishers, and the second one illuminators. That when we relate to people, the way we sort of move toward people is either we diminish or we illuminate. Either we connect or disconnect. Either we see or we don't. And here's the way he describes the difference. He said diminishers make people feel small and unseen. They see other people as things to be used, not as persons to be befriended. They stereotype and ignore. They are so involved with themselves that other people are just not on their radar screen. Illuminators, on the other hand, have a persistent curiosity about other people. They've been trained or have trained themselves in the art or in the craft of understanding others. They know what to look for and how to ask the right questions at the right time. They shine the brightness of their care on people and make them feel bigger, deeper, respected, lit up. How can we be like Jesus, who was an illuminator? My guess is most of the people in that crowd were diminishers. They just saw her as a stereotype. She was a widow in a nowhere place, sad for her, but, you know, not gonna interrupt my life. But not Jesus. He locked in. He saw her in a way that connected, in a way that impacted, in a way where she very much felt seen. And what does it look like for you and me to become an illuminator? And I want to break that down just from looking at the way Jesus related. Kind of like breaking down a golf swing. You know, you'd say, okay, what's your setup? You know, what's your backswing? You know, how are you going to come through the ball? All that. Let's just sort of break it down like that. And there's a few components to this if we're going to be better at connecting and seeing and illuminating. The first one is focus. One of the ways that made Jesus stand out, and when you read through, which I did this week, when you read through his interactions with people in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John in the New Testament, is you can tell, like, when he talked to somebody, he zeroed in on them as if they were the most important person in the universe. Because at that moment, I think they were the most important person in the universe to him, no matter who they were, no matter what category, big shot, little shot, messed up person who felt like they had it all together, it didn't matter. He zeroed in on people. He focused on people. And they knew that. They felt that. They felt valued. They felt seen. My dad was really good at that, even though he was a busy guy with a lot of responsibility. My dad had a small company that was an aerospace company, and their flight instruments tended to go, many of them went on last at the end, like right before the flight went off. So they were always, had a lot of pressure and deadlines, because since their stuff went on last, if they were late, it would delay the flight, which was a big, really big deal. That's millions and millions and millions of dollars every day that it's delayed. And so there was a lot of pressure around his company. But as a kid, all the way into adulthood, I didn't know that. Really, at least I didn't feel that, because whenever I called him, even if they were running late to get stuff to a flight, every time I went by the office, what I would get was, "Jeff, I am so glad you came," or "I'm so glad you called. Tell me what's going on." And I felt like the most important being in his life, in the universe, at that moment. Had no idea all the urgency and all the stuff that was happening. And I was valued and I was seen, right? Which is connective. It pulls me toward him. Like I want to connect him because I feel like he wants to connect with me. And when we relate, let's make sure we relate in a way that the other person on the other side feels that. It's not, "Oh, hey, good to see you. What's going on? I got to kind of go." But as much as possible, say, "No, I'm going to lock in." And other cultures do that a lot better than we do, because we prioritize fast over relationships. And some of you are from cultures that are better at that. You can help us, the rest of us, to key in. Especially now, we talked last week about the digital thing and how it keeps us from real relationships. Same thing is true in terms of focus. They've done these studies that show that even, like, if you have a family dinner or you meet with somebody and you put your phone on the table or on the coffee table or on the dinner table or whatever, even if it's upside down, like with the face down, that it greatly diminishes feelings of connection and meaning and significance on the other side. And my mom has been telling me that forever. She's a good connector too. So whenever I'm with her and I've got my phone, she's like, "Would you please not have your phone out?" I'd be like, "It's upside down." But it doesn't matter. And she's right. And some of it is just, and there's so much power, and studies have shown this, so much power in just putting the phone away and having a family meal or a date or as a couple or just as friends, whatever, just saying, let's put the phone away. Turn it off or put it somewhere else. It's hard to focus in our culture. But that's the first thing, is focus. The second one is generosity. Second component, there's four. And by generosity, I mean generosity of spirit that the person can feel. 1 Corinthians 13 tells us this, that love assumes the best in people. And that's the way Jesus related. When you looked at all these different categories of people that Jesus related to, he related to them in a positive way. He assumed the best. He didn't relate to them as a stereotype, as a group. Oh, I know you people. He didn't do that. And that's why he built bridges to all these different groups in that culture, because he had generosity of spirit. He assumed the best in people and that they had something to offer and something to say, even if they were very different from him. And in our culture, we're kind of losing that. And as Jesus people, we've got to relate like Jesus. And that is to do what love demands, and that is to see the best in another person and not see them, not stereotype, not see them as a category. Oh, I got them figured out. But realize, no, they're not a category. They're a person. In fact, if they're different from me, they're even more valuable because I desperately need people who are different and who think different from me. Because I don't have it all figured out, and I can. There's always something to learn from every single group. And as we go through this political season, I mean, let's make sure we go through it that way. To say, okay, I'm not just gonna see them as a Democrat, I know what they're thinking, or see them as a Republican, or see them as an independent, or see them as an apathetic, but just see them as people that, and assume the best. And they probably, even if they think differently, have something to say that I can learn from and be helpful. And what unites us as a church isn't all that stuff anyway. It's Jesus above it all. And let's just relate that way as we go through this time. But generosity of spirit. Curiosity is the third one. When you look at Jesus, this is interesting to me because Jesus was God, which meant he knew everything already, but he's the one that asked the most questions than anybody. Which is interesting. The one who knows the answers asks the most questions in relationships. And why? Because questions bring people out. The right kind of open-ended questions bring people out. And then you extend that. Say, hey, tell me more about that. How did it make you feel? What do you think about? And Jesus related that way. He was a question asker because he was curious. And curiosity draws people out. Questions draw people out. I saw a great picture of this last week, last Sunday. Most of the time on Sunday afternoons after church, Christy and I go to eat with my mom and go to eat lunch with my mom and a friend of hers that lives at Highland Springs, longtime Chase Oaker named Sandra. And we got to lunch. Christy was out of town last week. I invited two of our elders or elder couple, Mark and Diana Hahn, were here. I said, hey, why don't you come eat with us? And both of them are really great illuminators. And great relators. And it was fun to see it because, and Mom and Sandra are too, actually. But I was just sort of watching this happen because Mark was talking with Sandra and Diana was talking with my mom. And I could primarily see that. And they were all connecting and curious. But Diana was so locked into my mom. Just eye contact and everything. Just her whole, like, everything was just, like, turned to her in a way that, hey, you matter. And the questions she was asking, these open-ended questions, you say, hey, I want to know more about that. That's fascinating. How did you make that decision? You know, what? And so on. And so we're leaving. When we're driving away, I was driving with my mom and Sandra, and we're driving away, and they were both like, wow, that was such an amazing lunch. That was just such a great time. And we feel, and why? Because there were people who were connective. They were seen. They were heard. They were valued. And it just took curiosity and the right kind of questions. And then the last one is compassion. You know, the passage we just read, it says, when the Lord saw her, his heart went out to her. He didn't just see with his eyes or even just understanding with his brain. That was true. What it's like to be a widow in a destitute situation who just lost her son. But his heart He saw with his heart. His heart went out to her. And he responds with compassion. Now, compassion is empathy that leads to action. Compassion and empathy aren't the same thing, but there is empathy and compassion. And empathy is just, what is it like to be the other person? What does it feel like to be you? And people who see people who are connective think that way and try to figure that out. And if we're going to do that, we think, wait, what would it feel like to be this other person? Like, what would it really feel like to be you? And your heart then goes out to that person. And compassion doesn't end there. Compassion then is active. You do what you can. Now, Jesus can raise people from the dead at a funeral and make the most memorable funeral ever. The rest of us can't really do that, as far, at least I can't. But I can do something, and you can too. And it's engaging in a way to say, hey, I'm not, I don't want to just know what it's like to be you. I want to enter into this with you. Whatever you're going through, I want to be for you and with you in it. And that's connective. And you put all this together, you know, what does it mean to see? What does it mean to connect? What does it mean to relate to somebody in a way where they feel valued and connected and seen? It's focus, generosity, curiosity, compassion. And I hope you know somebody. I hope you have somebody in your life who relates like that. And if you do, you're a very fortunate person because it's rare. Diminishing is not rare at all in our world right now. Illuminating, pretty rare. But for Jesus followers, this is one of the ways that we follow him. To say, I'm going to learn not to be a diminisher. I'm going to learn to be an illuminator. To zero in toward people, to see people, to value people, to be curious about people, to be compassionate with people. And so here's what I want us to do this week. I want us to practice being an illuminator. And what I want, the way I want to do that is every day, I want you to wake up. That's a good start. And when you wake up, pray, and just pray, God, today, help me see like Jesus sees. Help me see people like Jesus sees people. God, today, help me focus and treat people that I interact with as the most important person on the planet at that moment. Help me focus. God, help me be generous too, of heart. Help me believe the best, especially if they're different in some way. And then help me be curious. God, help me just know how to engage in a way and ask the right questions and extend their answers in a way that I can pull people out. And then God, help me be compassionate too. Not just to walk away and be like, well, stinks to be you. But to say, oh no, what would it look like to say, no, I wanna help you. Or I wanna pray for you, all right? And here's what'll happen if you do this. A couple things. One is the day is gonna be an amazing day. Because you're going to have stories to tell at the end of the day. It's like an adventure living like Jesus that way. And the second thing that'll happen is you'll have people like a magnet who feel very connected to you and who want to be connected to you. You won't have problems as we're talking about how do you build these connections and not be lonely and all this stuff in this culture. A person who relates like this is not going to have problems finding those people and connecting to those people because it's so rare. And the other thing that'll happen is you make Jesus really happy because he loves every one of those people that come across our path. Let's pray and ask for his help. Father, I do, first of all, thank you that you see us. You know us. You've called us to yourself. You want to be with us and for us in life. And then you want us to live, relate that way with other people around us. And God, would you help us to be connective? Would you help us to relate to people in a way where they feel seen and valued and heard and where they feel like they're not alone, but we're in it with them? God, really teach us to do this and just live the adventure of this Jesus way of living and relating. In Jesus' name, amen.